माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओं विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anant Koti Vaishnava Vrind Ki Jai Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to assembled devotees All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudiraye Nashtaprayeshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 7, Text 14. Tesham kupata deshtranam patatam tamasahi adha ye shraddhadhyor vachaste vai Majjanti Ashmaplava Iva Tesham Kupata Deshtranam Patatam Tamasahi Adaha Yeshadadhyur Vachastevai Majjanti Ashmaplava Iva space. Tesham of them, the misleaders. Kupatha Deshtrunam, who show the path of danger. Patatam, themselves falling. Tamasi, in darkness. He, indeed. Adaha, down. Ye, anyone who. Shradhadyur, place faith in. Vachaha, the words. Te, they. Why, indeed. Majanti, sink. Ashmaplavaha, boats made of stone. Eva, like. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Leaders who have fallen into ignorance and who mislead people by directing them to the path of destruction, as described in the previous verse, are in effect boarding a stone boat, and so too are those who blindly follow them. A stone boat would be unable to float and would sink in the water with its passengers. Similarly, those who mislead people go to hell and their followers go with them. Purport. As stated in the Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 20, Text 17, Nirdeham Adhyam Sulabham Sudurlabham Plavam Sukalpam Guru Karanadharam. We, the conditioned souls, have fallen in the ocean of nations. But the human body fortunately provides us a good opportunity to cross the ocean, because the human body is like a very good boat. When directed by a spiritual master acting as the captain, the boat can very easily cross the ocean. Furthermore, the boat is helped across by favorable winds, which are the instructions of Vedic knowledge. If one does not take advantage of all these facilities to cross the ocean of nations, he is certainly committing suicide. One who boards a boat made of stone is doomed. To be elevated to the stage of perfection, humanity must first give up false leaders who present boats of stone. All of human society is in such a dangerous position that to be rescued, it must abide by standard instructions of the Vedas. The cream of these instructions appears in the form of Bhagavad Gita. One should not take shelter of any other instructions, for Bhagavad Gita gives direct instruction on how to fulfill the aim of human life. Lord Shri Krishna therefore says, Sarva dharman parityajya, mam ekam sharanam vraja. Give up all other processes of religion and simply surrender to me. Even if one does not accept Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his instructions are so exalted and beneficial for humanity that if one follows his instructions, one will be saved. Otherwise, one will be cheated by unauthorized meditation and gymnastic methods of yoga. Thus one will board a boat of stone, which will sink and drown all its passengers. Unfortunately, although the American people are extremely eager to get out of materialistic chaos, they are sometimes found to patronize the makers of stone boats. That will not help them. They must take the proper boat offered by Krishna in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement. They will be easily saved. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Ashmam yaha plavo yesham, te yatha majjantam, plavam anumajjanti tatheti raja niti upadeshtrashu sarvasabhyeshu kapo vyajantaha vyangitaha. If society is guided by political diplomacy, with one nation maneuvering against another, it will certainly sink like a boat, like a stone boat. Political maneuvering and diplomacy will not save human society. People must take to Krishna consciousness to understand the aim of life, to understand God, and to fulfill the human mission. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Before we speak on this verse, I wanted to express on behalf of all the devotees our gratitude to Govinda Prabhu for coming and spending his time with us, energizing us with kirtan and just his presence. Two other devotees who've been here, but they're in different places right now. Atmarama Prabhu also visits us once a year and brings us kirtan in a very different way, and is always nice to come. He is nice association. And Navina Nirdha Prabhu for spending 2 weeks with us. He left this morning at 5 o'clock, I believe. And he's been here to help us surcharge our book distribution efforts and inspire us of that missionary spirit. So very grateful for that association as well. And I'd like to welcome both of you again this morning. I saw you last night at our discussions upstairs. Thank you. The context, as perhaps you're already aware, but it's Monday morning, and I get the honor of the Monday morning class. What happened is Indra, who's the king of heaven, is the king of the demigods. There are 33 million demigods who manage, in some shape or form, the universal affairs. And the king of all of these great personalities is Indra. The word Indra means king. So his position is a very, very special and very powerful position. It is described that one who performs 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas can become an Indra in their next life. Which means it's a very, very exalted, powerful position. To be the king of the demigods who manage the entire heaven and all the demigods who manage universal affairs. He is the king. And it so happened that he was enjoying a particular program. And his spiritual master, Burhaspati, who appeared at the scene, but then returned away, or turned away, because Indra did not respect him properly. Indra was seated on the throne with all the different categories of heavenly personalities, the Vasus, the Rudras, etc., etc., this whole big list of people. And naturally, he was on the height of his being a king. So when a spiritual master came into the assembly, then the proper etiquette is, and it doesn't matter who the person is, the proper etiquette is to get up and offer respect to the spiritual master. And one who fails that, then they lose all the piety that they have gathered by different ways, right? They may have gathered some piety by austerity, some piety by the dint of their devotional activities, etc. But when one forgets to offer respect to someone superior, then what's the use of all of this? So when Brihaspati came, Indra was so enamored by the program that was going on and everyone was appreciating and glorifying him that he did not respect Brihaspati. Now Brihaspati, instead of cursing Indra, since we've been hearing about the cursing and all that, instead of cursing him, just quietly turned away, turned and went away. And Indra suddenly felt that, what we call in English, the uh-oh moment, right? We all have that experience of an uh-oh moment when we are in the middle of something and we have done something or said something intentionally or unintentionally, and we suddenly feel in the heart like a little uh-oh, we shouldn't have done it that way, right? We all have that. We have many of that. So Lord Indra also had one of those. And the very first thing that he did, which is proper, is that he expressed regret. It's a sign of humility. Expressing regret is a sign of humility. Not expressing regret or justifying something is a sign of arrogance or pride. That justification is, what's wrong after all? Only once I did not offer respect to my guru, but hey, every day I'm doing it, right? Three times a day, every day. Once in a while I forget, I'm conditioned soul, what's wrong? So that justification is a sign of pride or arrogance. Indra, although being the king of heaven, thankfully his humility is acting in such a way that he's regretting it. Oh, that's terrible. And yesterday's verse, he says, one who's situated, if a person says this, one who is situated on the exalted throne of a king should not stand up to show respect to another king or a brahmana, it is to be understood that he does not know the superior religious principles. So a general principle, you know, sometimes we think, what is the right thing to do? Anyone had that question or doubt in mind? When we are in the presence of someone, let's say a senior devotee or another devotee, may not be senior, but a peer or someone, and we have this doubt, what should I do? What's the right way to act in this situation? So it's the best thing is to err on the side of humility. That is always safe. Always, always, always safe to err on the side of humility. Although it's not erring, but it's always that we take the side of humility. When in doubt, err on the side of humility. That means offer proper respect. Nothing goes wrong with that. And today's verse, he's chastising himself as being a wrong leader. Because as the king of heaven, when he did not offer respect to Brihaspati, everyone else saw. And they may think, oh, this is right. This is okay. So as devotees, we carry the same responsibility. We may not be the kings of heavens or the king of any place. We sometimes think we're the king of our household, but that is also not true. It's an illusion to think I'm the king of my household. We think we are little tiny kings or controllers or Ishwaras. If I can't control a household, at least I can control one other person. I'm Ishwara in that sense. But the moment we try to control our mind, we know we're not Ishwaras for anything. But as devotees of Krishna, now whether we like it or not, this is a fact, that we become leaders of society. We become leaders of society because we proclaim with our tilak, our Vaishnava attire, a particular message to the world that we are trying to dedicate our lives in the service of Krishna. There are many other things that pull, distract, entice people with. Money, corporate positions, becoming famous, etc. But as a devotee, we have expressed to the world and to Krishna that we have turned our faces away from all of that and want to become a humble servant of Krishna. Right? Whether we are or not is a different issue, but our goal is to become a humble servant of Krishna. It's a declaration to the world. It's a very big declaration. And we've been hearing how different devotees were enticed. They were enticed to taking up big positions in the world, or they were enticed with money, fame, a lot of enjoyment, materialistic enjoyment. But the devotees turned their faces away from all of that, because wanting to be a humble servant of Krishna is far more attractive than the other worldly attractions. As I said, at least theoretically, there is some understanding in this, and in the from the lives of great Vaishnavas, we feel that inspiration. And because we feel that inspiration, every morning we wake up, we take a bath, we put on tilak, we put on Vaishnava dress, we offer our prayers at the lotus feet of the spiritual master and Krishna, that may we realize that service to Krishna and the Vaishnavas is the greatest wealth and asset than anything else. Oh my dear Krishna, oh my dear spiritual master, please let me realize that wealth. I have it very theoretically sitting somewhere in my head. Let that descend into my heart, that this is the true place for me. And that's why we continue. Otherwise, what's the reason? Because prasadam is great? I don't think so. You know, that's not the motivator. Sometimes it feels like that, but that's not it. So Indra, by dint of his not doing something or doing something, sets an example for everyone else. Similarly for the devotees, by doing something or not doing something, sets an example for the rest of society. Whether we like it or not, we can't say, oh, I don't like them using me as an example. But too bad. As soon as we put on Vaishnava dress, tilak, we chant Hare Krishna, we become examples. In fact, the rest of the world evaluates the Hare Krishna movement by the example we set in society, you know, how we speak, how we behave, etc. There's an example in Srila Prabhupada's life. His Holiness Satswarup Maharaj used to be Prabhupada's personal secretary for a few years. And Prabhupada would always travel with one little white briefcase. And that white briefcase had some important papers of Prabhupada, his passport, and a key. It's a little digression. That key, this is the way Prabhupada would lock things, very meticulous. This key would be a key, would be a key to a lock somewhere else, and in that lock or that little cabinet would be another key that would open another cabinet somewhere else, and in that cabinet would be a key that would open a safe somewhere else. This is Prabhupada, at least three layers of security. And he had a little briefcase that he would walk with. And the secretary, this was Satswarup Maharaj at that time, would carry that for Prabhupada. So once, and Srila Prabhupada, as we know, he never walked slow. He was always brisk in his walking. So they were at an airport, and Prabhupada was already at the counter, and Satswarup Maharaj was somewhere way back. So there was a line in between. And Satswarup Maharaj, in his rush to be with Srila Prabhupada, because he may need the little briefcase or something, was maneuvering through the crowd, almost becoming insensitive to everyone else. And so he was elbowing someone, nudging someone out of the way, and just pushing himself through the crowd. So one elderly lady, she stopped him in his tracks, and he says, "Young man, is this what they teach you in your movement?" And for him, it was like a rude awakening that although I'm focused on serving Srila Prabhupada, which is nice, I'm also conducting myself as a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, as a follower. And how I'm behaving sets a tone and example for the rest of the world. So Indra also recognized that. And he's chastising himself as leaders who have fallen into ignorance and who mislead people by directing them away from or directing them into the path of destruction. Kupata Deshpranam. In Sanskrit, wherever there's a prefix ku, it means bad. And wherever there is a prefix su, means very good. Right? So ku patha means a path of destruction or bad path. And Deshpranam is to do with drishti, to show. So one who shows person the wrong path, leaders who show their followers the wrong path. He says, patatam tamasihi adha. They definitely fall into ignorance. And not only they, all their followers also fall into ignorance. Because their followers, ye shadhadyur vachastevai, with lot of faith, they follow the words of those false leaders or ignorant leaders. And majanti, they sink. Ashma plava eva. We know these words. Ashma. Ashma means stone. Right? In the chanting of the holy name, a famous verse, yadashmasaram. Right? Ashmasaram means, Prabhupada says, steel framed heart. In translation, it's Prabhupada writes as stone. Stone hearted. So ashma plava. Plava means boat, and plava, the long boats. So ashma plava eva. So these leaders who mislead their followers, they are like those persons who put their followers and themselves aboard stone boats. What happens to a stone boat? It sinks. Boats have to be made from elements that can float. Although stainless steel and iron also, although major ships are made from iron, they're made hollow. That's why they float. But a stone boat means take a big rock, make a hole in it and sit in it. They're at the bottom of the lake or river. A stone boat does not float, it sinks. That means, although it looks like a carrier that can take a person from one place to another, it doesn't make its journey. It becomes useless. Similarly, so-called leaders who misguide their followers, they actually do more destruction to their followers than any benefit. So what are the different things that the misguiding leaders do? They inspire people for materialistic goals. They inspire people for things that are temporary. Sometimes they inspire them for something that's very violent and really foolish. But in general, there are some leaders who, in the guise of being spiritualists, they will speak about the message of God. They'll speak about compassion. They'll speak about service. But how they engage their followers has nothing to do with God consciousness. They will say service to humanity is something that is very pleasing to God. And they will engage all their followers in service to humanity without knowing what is the best service to do. Or they will gather their followers and say, you know, they gather people around a particular ideology. Save the dolphin, save the Bengal tiger, save the planet, save the redwoods, whatever. I mean, it doesn't mean that these things should not be saved. That's totally cool. Yeah, these animals and all that, one shouldn't unnecessarily kill. We all agree with that. But that's not the goal of life. The goal of life is not that at the end of the day, so many tigers have been saved and a person hasn't saved himself. I started reading this book by Satsarup Maharaj called Vaishnava Compassion. And one of the things that Prabhupada brings out right in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita is compassion is a very wonderful quality, but one should know how to direct it. And he gives the example of a drowning man. If a person is drowning and another person who's at the banks of the river sees the drowning man, runs up to the drowning man, jumps into the water, swims to the person, says, don't worry, I'll save you. Picks up his coat or shirt, removes that and brings it back and says, yes, now this person is saved. It makes no sense. It's by saving the coat of the drowning man has not been saved. So like that, just trying to do something on the bodily or mental platform, which are nothing but coverings of the soul, artificial material coverings of the soul, one hasn't done any benefit. Has some benefit, but not ultimate benefit. So it's very important. So instead of carrying all different types of ideologies, Krishna says, get rid of all these ideologies. Sarva dharman parityaja. Nowadays everything is a religion, right? Atheism, someone said, Jay Keshava Prabhu used to say, I believe, I don't know where he got it from, but someone would say, I'm an atheist or something, he would say, oh, that's also a religion. What's your denomination of atheism? It's also a religion. They're so vehement about being atheists. It's like almost they're very fanatic religionists. Different people have different ideas of religion, you know, and it's not just worship of God or a sacred book or something, but they put all their energy behind an ideology. It becomes a religion for them. And Krishna says, drop all of it. Drop it right now. And just surrender unto me. Because that's the true, or that's the call to action for the human form of life. That is to reinstate ourselves in our true nature. Otherwise, we're walking around with a different conception of who we are, not knowing who we are. If I walk around the city of Chicago telling everyone, I'm the President of the United States of America, they'll call the mental health professionals and say, take this guy away. Some identity. Or you walk around, I hug everyone and say, I'm Mother Teresa. Like, get away from me. It has no meaning. We have wrong identities. But that's how people are all around the world, walking with the wrong sense of identity. The only identity we have is that we are parts and parcels of God, of Krishna. And that's the only thing to know. And those leaders who don't allow that to happen or don't even consider that, they're putting all their followers and themselves onto a boat made of stone. The human form of life, which we hear again and again, has a very special gift, is a very special gift. Because between the human beings and animals, most things are common. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The only distinction is the humans, they don't know their limits for any of these. Because for an animal, they don't overeat. We've never seen an animal overeating. They don't have among themselves like a discussion, yeah, I need to run on the treadmill, I'm a little obese now. It's not like that. They know their limit in eating. They know their limit in sleeping. They definitely don't know their limit in mating. Human beings have absolutely no limit in mating. In fact, they're mating every moment. Wherever they look, like, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The animals defend themselves only when they feel they're in danger. Human beings defend themselves even when there's no danger. All danger is imagined. It's imagined. Of course, there are dangers, not like there is no danger at all. But to defend themselves against danger is different from build up of everything. So many arms, so much ammunition, so many words we throw out at others to defend ourselves, etc. So human beings have no limit. They don't know where the boundary is for these things. That's one. And the second, it's described that what distinguishes animals from human beings is a fifth thing. A fifth thing is that by which we know who we really are. The power of inquisitiveness to seek out who we really are. Dharmo adhiko hi visheshatah. That's one thing that is special about human beings. Animals don't have these things. They don't get together and have a Bhagavatam class. They don't get together and discuss why is there suffering. They don't get together and discuss how can we serve Krishna and how can we serve society. They don't do all these discussions. They get together and discuss where are we going to get the next meal from? How are we going to run away if a predator is chasing us? I'm sure they don't discuss, but they have some signals by which they tell each other that. But the human form of life gifts us a very, very, very unique ability is to ask, a very unique ability to find out, to discover who we really are and what the purpose of life is all about. And when one doesn't use it, it is almost pitiable. Like, oh, really? And a great opportunity lost. Because this human form of life doesn't come back so easily. And even if it does come, it is filled with mode of passion to such a degree that a person will degrade it to mode of ignorance. Urdhvam gacchanti sattvastha, madhye tishtanti rajasah. So one may think, oh, it's not so bad. If I continue being in the mode of passion, I get another human form. But we understand that mode of passion, if it is not cultured to become elevated to mode of goodness, it will definitely sink to the mode of ignorance. Because the modes are always fighting or always trying to supersede another one. So it becomes our everyday purpose to know or to consider what is the purpose of my living? What am I doing? At the end of the day, when we get to bed, if we have to ask ourselves, today, how did I utilize my human form of life? Unless we get an answer that is satisfying enough, that day has been wasted. Unless we get an answer that says, today you utilized your human form of life in trying to understand your true nature a little bit. Today you used your human form of life in helping someone else also understand the purpose of their human form of life. To whatever degree, at least you made an attempt, then there is some meaning there. Today, I ate, I slept. I didn't do anything for realizing the human form of life. Then it's a shame. It's a shame that such a wonderful gift that has been offered has not been utilized. So it's the reason we come to Bhagavatam class, the reason we associate with the devotees. We have prasadam, we sing Guru Vashtaka and Guru Puja and want to serve the devotees, want to serve in various ways, is all an affirmation that we want to utilize our human form of life in a right way, in a beneficial way for us and for others. Otherwise, the Hitopadesha says, one is no better than an animal. धर्मेन हीन पशुभिर समान. विदाउट दिस विदाउट यूटिलाइजिंग दिस फैकल्टी ऑफ दैट एक्स्ट्रा परसेप्शन टू नो व्हाट लाइफ इज ऑल अबाउट, वन इज नो बेटर देन एन एनिमल. इट्स अ स्ट्रांग फ्रेज दैट हितोपदेश यूजेस. दे नीड टू शेक अस अप वंस इन अ व्हाइल, अदरवाइज we tend to mislead ourselves thinking everything's nice, it's cool, nice, how are you, cool, that's good, life's good, life's not good. I mean, life itself is good, but what we utilize life for is more meaningful. That's what gives meaning to it. In this, I'll end with this. In the second canto of Bhagavatam, Shukadev Goswami is very, very strong about a few things. He said, what's the use of a long life if it is not utilized for Krishna consciousness? There are many trees that live for many thousands of years. So in that sense, a redwood is far better than a person who lives a very long life. They live 3,000, 5,000 years. What's the value? I mean, I'm not saying redwoods have no value, but what's the value that in terms of self-realization or breathing? He says, oh, even the blacksmith's bellows are breathing. Well, what's the use of it? What's the use of having ears that don't hear about Krishna? They're like snake holes. What is the use of having eyes that don't look for opportunities of serving Krishna or looking at the form of Krishna? Those eyes are like, or as useless as the eyes on the plumes of peacocks. What is the use of having legs that don't take us to the right place where there is discussion of Krishna Katha? Those legs are no better than tree trunks. What is the use of the hands that are decorated with wonderful bangles and, you know, jewelry, but if those hands don't clap or they're not used in cleaning the temple of Krishna, what's the use of those hands? They're like decorations on a dead body. What is the use of a head, although maybe adorned with a silk turban with all jewelry on it, but if it does not bow down before Krishna, what's the use of that head? Etc. It's heavy to say that there's a purpose in human life. And those who become leaders, here particularly in this verse, Nrudeham, those who are embodiments as leaders, which, by the way, is one and all of us, in some way or the other, if they don't set the right example by their behavior, they're doing a lot of disservice to their followers. That's the essence. Any questions, comments, would like to add something? It's our basic Hare Krishna message. Yeah.
Thank you, Prabhu. One thing that we have an association here in the temple, and association is a tremendous asset for staying on track, for evaluating for oneself, am I going the right way or am I out of line? And how can we use this opportunity of association in a systematic way to optimize our growth in Krishna consciousness?
Hearing, serving, cooperating. And I would say speaking. Hearing from the devotees, their realizations, serving the devotees, serving the devotees and serving with the devotees, cooperating with the devotees, and speaking means sharing from our side how we are realizing the mercy of Krishna in our life. Very, very important. That's called kirtanam. Of course, chanting congregationally, that's also, that is the main definition. But also discussing how we are experiencing the mercy of Krishna, how we are experiencing that mercy coming through other devotees. It's not just the spiritual master, but every devotee gives us mercy somehow or the other. And to be able to receive that and to express that is very important. That's how we use association. Though I would say those would be the best. If we are able to do these things in the association of devotees, that would be very nice. And there are some do-nots, which would be the flip side of those things, right? Insensitivity, not hearing other devotees, not speaking to the devotees, not cooperating, fault-finding, criticizing, blaspheming. Then we get the contra-effects of association. Alright. Jai Jagannath Prabhu. And then someone else, Himanshu. And then someone else. Yes.
Yeah. And probably all major traditions of the world, there will be like somewhat of an underscore on compassion toward others, yes, or nonviolence. Speaking a lot about our dealings with the entities of this world. And then there will be other messages that pertain more to direct transcendence and so on. But generally, the types of things that people put faith in are those things which pertain less to transcendence and more to their dealings with this world, because it's more tangible.
Right.
And so I was just wondering, in terms of how we should perceive, what should be our perspective of this, because in Krishna consciousness, we do often disparage like philanthropy and altruism and compassion towards humanity, and we would often speak about such persons as misleading society. But then I'm thinking of a tradition like Christianity, where practically most of Christianity's emphasis is on compassion to others. You know, Jesus healed the sick and, you know, all these sorts of things. So in the modern context, they tend to take that almost like a religious principle, mm-hmm, although it has a little bit less to do with God, but they take it very religiously because of their faith as such. And although Jesus emphasized other things also which they don't follow, according to the development of their faith, they're just kind of selecting this particular element. So it's not like we would say, and generally devotees won't say, that Jesus is kupatadishri, now he's misled right. them. But rather, their faith only allows them to accept this much of the message, and they need to make progress. So my question is more how we should view them, because oftentimes we hear like the strong thing, this philanthropy is just smash it. And then we go out into the world, and when interacting with other entities in the world who are doing things like, you know, save the dolphins and all these things, we have our mind takes a negative form towards our perspective toward them. But I was wondering, is there another way we could process that where, I don't want to use the word accommodating, but understanding that it has its place even within the religious
sure.
context, so that our, like that, that's kind of...
Yeah, sure, sure. I mean, I hope to have not conveyed that... No, good, thank you, but from my side, I hope to have not conveyed that... doing things for others and being nice and kind to people is bad or something. No, it is very important. A Vaishnava's crown jewel quality is jivadaya, showing our gestures of affection unto all living entities. What happens before what happens? In the, let's say, in the universe, everything has its place. Everything has its place. There's nothing that is wasteful or useless. Everything has its place. And now down to, with that principle on in our day-to-day life, every person has their place, every act has its place. So there are very great persons who make charitable contributions for something that is beneficial to human beings, something that's beneficial to the animals, to the birds, to the insects. That's very nice. It's not that it's bad. It's very nice. It is an act in the mode of goodness. However, those acts, although are very nice, they don't fulfill the ultimate purpose of existence. They take a person from step one to step two, which is fine. We don't have an objection to it. But it may not take them from two to three to five or seven. The point that's made in Krishna consciousness is that all of these things have their place. Altruism, philanthropy, charity, etc. have their place with Krishna in the center. The devotees are very altruistic, they're very philanthropic, they're very charitable, they're very loving, they're very caring for all living entities, but with Krishna in the center. When Krishna is not, when it's not directly in one's consciousness that Krishna is in the center of this, I am trying to please Krishna. But if I just do something and say it's pleasing to God, well, it's pleasing in a way, yes. But it's not pleasing in the complete sense of it. If I forget Krishna, or if I forget God in the purpose that I'm doing, then it loses its charm. It has some effect, but it loses its charm. For example, a doctor who administers medicine. It's fantastic service. They're able to set right the body in a particular way, the organs in a particular way, so that the person can continue living. Of course, we not karmically speaking, we just they continue living, and they can, you know, be with their family, whatever, live life, make money. So the act of being a doctor is a very beneficial act. But a doctor, let's say a devotee as a doctor, has a whole different effect on people. Because they're able to somehow directly or indirectly put into their patients the whole idea that beyond this body there is something else that needs to be taken care of. Relationship with God, for example. They may say it this way or that way, even if they don't say it, if they have a good spiritual practice, by their presence, people will get touched somehow or the other, that they will, today or tomorrow, ask, what is this all about? Then yes, it meets its ultimate purpose. Otherwise it falls short. Although it takes a person from here to there, it still falls short. So when we talk like this, especially, then yes, we do speak strongly that these things don't take a person all the way to understanding their true nature. And the cornerstone of the Hare Krishna movement is that we speak this. That's the first thing that we talk about. That's a relationship with Krishna. That's our relationship with God. Then everything has its place, otherwise it doesn't have its value. It has its limited value. So there are many persons out there who are very good at saving the dolphins, who are very good at saving the tigers, who are very good at saving the human beings, you know, through medicine or food or however. Great. Fantastic. And they have a place in society. We're very grateful that they are there. But the Hare Krishnas are not for that. Our purpose is to connect people to God. So everyone has their place. Great. But this is what we are known for. And this is what our, mission is. So we don't poo-poo anyone else.
Thank you. I have another question. How do we balance this be an example message that often comes up? Because I'll tell you personally, it's not a message that I've always resonated with.
I know.
because I have anartas and I'm very aware of what my bad qualities are and
sure.
so on. And I don't like to put unnecessary pressure on myself to be an example that I can't be yet. And
no,
so
no.
for that, I mean, this is the reason why I've not always resonated with
sure.
that particular message, because sometimes when I hear that message and I feel like it's like the walls are closing in for you to come to a level
crush
that you're
you.
Not ready to be at yet.
Yeah.
Because
but
others are looking at you.
Being an example, I don't think the call to action is that we all have to be like Srila Prabhupada. I mean, if that were the case, then I would be the first to leave. I can't do it. The call to action is not be an example like Srila Prabhupada. The call to an action is be genuine. And persons need to learn, as an example, what does being a genuine person be? Being a genuine person is like. A genuine person, to whatever degree we have compassion or, I guess, softness of our heart, it's exhibited. It's exhibited in how we interact with others, etc. And part of that being an example is that we're very accepting of our frailties. If someone says something, you say, you know, I'm very sorry, I'm not the best, person for the Hare Krishna movement. I'm trying. You know, I'm sure there are wonderful other persons. Just even saying that is a great example. Otherwise, everyone feels like, I'm the best. A devotee's example is, oh, I'm not the best. Nothing wrong. That sets a beautiful example. The point here is example doesn't mean that we have to be the shining jewels of perfection roaming around. No, that's not the point. The point is we are honest and genuine. That's an example. Now, what is not an example is because I'm a Vaishnava, I can do anything and everything and this everything else is anyway material, I'm spiritual. That is not the right example. For example, looking down upon people, karmis, or the red light is there, it says do not walk, no jaywalking. And we say, these are all material laws anyway, I'm governed by spiritual laws, jaywalking, running the light, or etc. Yesterday, day before yesterday, someone asked me, I'm in a hurry to get to work, and my work is to deal with helping others. It was devotee, practicing devotee. Is it okay for me to run the red light? I said, no, it's not. Although these laws are not made by Krishna per se, Krishna did not put a red light there. But what I'm dealing with is not the red light. I'm dealing with the consciousness that I don't care for authority. That's what's actually driving me there. It's the consciousness that why others should tell me what I should do or not. I can live my life on my own. It's that issue that needs to be addressed. So therefore you should follow authority. Because it creates a samskara that's helpful. Oh. So those are examples. Otherwise, you know, we on our car is stuck this beautiful sticker, Hare Krishna, running through red light. Or we have the bead bag and tilak and just our eyes closed, chanting Hare Krishna, walking through. Those are, for example, I'm being a little facetious, but you had the idea. So the example is to be genuine. And people like genuineness. That we say, you know what, I'm sorry, this is a mistake on my part. I accept it. That's great. People like that. Most people can't even say, I'm sorry. It's a mistake I made. They can't say. The sorry is also very superficial. Oh, I'm sorry. In fact, we don't even think sometimes when we say sorry. Out on the street, suppose you're walking and someone bumps into you, they say sorry. It's more of it's a habit. It's a superficial exchange of sorry or thank you. It's not genuine. To whatever degree we can be genuine, we'd be genuine. That's the point I was making. Thank you for bringing that up, though. Himanshu had a question? It's all right. Burning, not burning. Something? Okay. Anything else? Jitendra Prabhu? Here's some one-liners.
I kind of heard that mundane welfare work is like putting a band-aid on a bullet hole, meaning that Krishna consciousness, we solve the eternal problem, getting rid of the body, which is the source of...
Yeah, but we can't expect everyone to do that.
No, I know. It's right? Just, it's just kind
the
of...
devotees do that. This is our expertise. It's our what we call core competency. That putting a band-aid has its place, it has its value, but that's not the complete solution.
Yeah, it has its shortcomings.
I've said this once, sometime in the past, and I'll make it short. I had an argument with a student, and the student had made up their decision that after they graduate, their purpose is to help orphan children. They want to raise money so they can go to school. And my argument was, that's very nice, but along with that, you should also help develop the Krishna consciousness of the children. And the person just could not get around to it. No, if the child has money to go to school, they get educated, they can earn their own livelihood, etc., etc., etc. And I said, try to understand that all that is nice, but what they do with the education, if suppose they have that education and they create a bomb more dangerous than the atom bomb, what has that education done for them and for others? No, you're just saying like that. So we had to end the argument by saying, all right, here's how I understand it from Prabhupada's teachings. From an overall concept, right, of from the Bhagavad Gita, we understand that this material world is like a prison house. And the material world is a place where we reform ourselves. Christian words, but you get the idea. So I said, between you and I, we're in disagreement here. You want to make a person's life in prison very comfortable. And Srila Prabhupada wants to give them freedom. And this is where we're disagreeing.
Yeah, he called it class A, B, or C prisoner.
That's right.
Thanks.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Garland, because then you would fail if you walk.
It will go all around.
Better you can take a garland from the fridge. I'll ask the pujari to give you.